Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining me for another edition of the Bob Sullivan Show. Tonight I have on with me from BasketballInsiders.com, Jabari Davis. Jabari, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Bob. Always good when I get to join you to talk some hoops for a little bit.
Yeah, it is. You know, we used to do these quite often, probably once a week, twice a week, you know, every chance we got. And then, it's fewer and fewer times, but we have more quality now than we do quantity, which I do every time we get together. It's a good conversation. I feel like we could go for about 3 hours every time.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's funny about that, Bob, you know, you're still a young man, but as you get older, you appreciate the quality more than the quantity. So, yeah, no, it works out. It definitely works out.
Well, first things first, before we get into basketball, were you a Breaking Bad guy?
I was a Breaking Bad guy. I got into the show a little bit late. I think I caught on about the third season, and I caught myself up pretty quickly. And yeah, I loved the show.
It's I've been watching the reruns. They're doing reruns up until they play Better Call Saul, and season 5 right now. It's just incredible. I mean, you look at the show. It's just like it kept getting better and better. Every episode built on itself. I can't, one of my guests last night said the only show he thought that compared to it was The Wire in that aspect, but I can't think of another show that I've watched where every episode just kept getting better and better, and I felt like it peaked at the end, which you don't see
Absolutely.
With the show ever.
I mean, look, whenever you know how I am when it comes to rankings, they're all subjective. They're all a matter of opinion anyhow, but it's pretty tough. You'd be hard pressed to find, say 5 shows better than Breaking Bad. You know what I mean? Like it was that good. I'm a fan of The Wire. Anybody that follows me on Twitter knows I'm a fan of The Wire. I'll throw random Wire quotes out there. But Breaking Bad is right there. For me, I would say The Sopranos was another one. I know it was a little while ago. Some of the listeners out there might not have ever seen it, but it in terms of storytelling, in terms of an expert level of writing, and as you mentioned, really nailing it and hitting the peak at the end. It's definitely up there.
You feel. I read an article, I've talked about this with a few people on my show, that over the years with the way Netflix is set up and Hulu and, all these streaming devices, people are actually, people are getting dumber to begin with, but people are getting even dumber by watching these TV series in bulk or by binge watching them, because it's like, believe it or not, kids who are listening to the show, there was a time where you would have to wait a week to see the next episode of a show. Like, I'm pretty young, but I still remember watching The Shield, week in, week out, think about what was going to happen next. And they said that's making us dumber as a society by not having to anticipate what's going to happen. We just, go from one episode to the next in 10 seconds, don't even think about what we just watched or think about what might happen next. Kind of narrows our minds. I found that pretty interesting.
That is interesting, and I hadn't really thought about it. I don't know if it necessarily will make you dumber, but I could see an argument being made for the lack of having to wait, the lack of having that week in between in order to process things, in order to get your creative mind going. Which angle is it going to go? What's the next twist? I guess I could go with that for a little bit. But at the same time, I will openly admit I'm a binge watcher. I've totally transitioned into that mode. Like I said, I caught up on Breaking Bad, seasons 1, 2, and 3, probably in about a 3-week span. Yeah, and I know, while working at the same time and still taking care of business, but pretty much I was mainlining Breaking Bad. So, maybe I'm getting dumb.
Yeah, I don't feel like, with Breaking Bad, you know, I watched it over about a 2 or 3 week period. I watched 5 seasons in that long, but it was only 65 episodes, so it wasn't, you know, it was obnoxious that I finished it that quickly, but it wasn't as bad as when I watched the entire series of 24, which is 8 seasons, 92 episodes, and I watched that in like a month and a half, which is just ridiculous that I was able to, you know, accomplish that. Or I wouldn't really call that an accomplishment. I'd call that a waste of life, but I did.
Hey, you know, it's only a waste. It's only a waste if you feel wrong about it, man. If you enjoyed it, I don't have like you know when people say guilty pleasures. No, it's not a guilty pleasure. I like it. I'm not concerning myself with what someone else thinks about, you know, the things that I like. So if you enjoyed those 96 hours or however long it was, then yeah, I say more power to you.
Well, on the NBA, I had Tim Donaghy on last night, and we were talking. I was asking him about, you know, Adam Silver being open to sports gambling, kind of being proactive with getting the NBA involved in it. And I asked him if it would be a good idea for the NBA to, well, you know how like an FBI, like you look at like a movie like Catch Me If You Can with Tom Hanks and Leonardo DiCaprio, and eventually Leonardo DiCaprio starts working for the FBI trying to catch other check fraud people and whatnot. Do you think the NBA should maybe not align itself with Tim Donaghy, but maybe talk to him to make sure that nothing like his situation happens again if they bring in this? I feel like if gambling and legalized sports gambling happens, that there could be issues that arise in the NBA like Donaghy's again. Don't you?
You know, that's a really interesting parallel. I was wondering when you started going into the Catch Me If You Can, I was like, where is he going with this? That's really intriguing. Look, at the very least, what I can say about Commissioner Silver, you know, whom I have loved so far, you know, thus far, he's almost a year into his tenure now. Or no, or did he just pass the year? Or he's right around his anniversary. I love the fact that he seems open to everything. He, you know, like nothing is just completely off the table. You know what I mean? So at the very least, I think that would be something that they would consider. You've got an asset that's out there. He was, formerly associated with the league. I know, it was a quote unquote black eye for the Stern administration, but I see no reason whatsoever why you wouldn't at least want to have that conversation with the guy.
Well, and especially, the guy, it wasn't like he was just placing bets. You know, he was in deep with the mob. I believe, like, just to, have him go talk to people. He said he didn't think there was any way the NBA would ever come back to him because they don't want to align themselves with him. But I just think it would be a good idea to, use him as a source, or not a source, but an asset to, you don't have to go public with it, but go to him, ask him, okay, how did you line yourself up with the mob? Who are some people to watch out for in the league? Mm-hmm. Just things in the league that could, give them hints that something wrong is going on.
I fully agree with that. You know, I'm a big believer in you got to, if there are assets available, if there are alternatives, if there are options that are out there, if you're in the interest of making money, and we know that the NBA is in the interest of making money, you have to explore them. And to your point, you're right. You don't have to do it publicly. Now, could the information leak out? Yes. And then, there are all types of different ways that you can take that. But at the end of the day, it's not like this guy is like some evil, entity. Yes, he did some shady things. Obviously, he got caught up and mixed in with certain practices that you probably shouldn't be involved in. But but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have a whole lot of information and a lot of knowledge that he could pass on. And maybe set their front office up to where that, like you said, they can avoid certain pitfalls.
Look, and he's not, he's not a guy. He's not did really shady things, did terrible things. But he I mean, I guess it's part of being a criminal, but I find him to be, you know, he's a nice guy. He's really nice to me. I find him to be genuine in his, you know, being regretful, remorse in the whole situation. And I think he's turned a page in his life, and I do think that it would be good for him to get back involved. But looking at, before we go into the All-Star break, Atlanta and Golden State are the leaders right now in the East and West, respectively. I'm guessing no man on the face of the earth had that. When we did previews, me, you, Jameson at times, of this season, Atlanta was in our bottom three. I listened to those. We were talking about how bad Atlanta would be. And they, you know, first place in the East, people are talking about how they're the Spurs of the East, which I'm not really buying into, but your take on Golden State and Atlanta right now.
Well, first I'll say that's the reason why I always let people know predictions and things of that nature, all they are is an opinion in that moment. You know, same thing with Phoenix last year. The digital magazine that we did, actually no, the print magazine that we did for, was that actually no, it was, yeah, Right When Basketball Insider started. I did a preview for the, you know, for the Phoenix Suns, and I said they were going to, you know, much like everyone else, I said, you know, they probably weren't going to do too well in under, you know, Jeff Hornacek in his first year, and obviously they came out and won 48 games and have, you know, and have continued that success. So when it comes to predictions, you know what, they are what they are. You know, the players get out there on the court and we see what they do. Atlanta is for real. They are, you know, look, I hear the argument about they don't have a superstar, they don't have, like, you know, that quote-unquote guy that you can throw the ball to in an intense, you know, playoff series. Yeah, I hear all of that. But what they do have are they have players that love to play together. They have players that will do whatever it takes for the next guy. They have players that step up, you know, when someone else is having a bad game, or step back if somebody's having a good game. You know, I don't know whether, you know, the whole Spurs East thing is legitimate, but what I can say is, I mean, obviously there's the connection with Budenholzer, worked for Popovich for, if I'm not mistaken, 20 years. So of course, that, you know, that philosophy, you know, will have at least leaked into, you know, into his, you know, how he goes about things, but. The truth is, they really don't have any flaws. They've got bigs that rebound, bigs that defend, bigs that can shoot outside, bigs that can score in the post. They've got guards that can shoot. They've got playmakers. They pretty much have it all. So for me, even though it's an extreme surprise, Atlanta legitimately is my top team in the East. Followed closely, and I know this may come as a surprise, but we can all be real about it now. Even if, you know, even if some of us thought it was going to go a different way, Cleveland is going to end up as the second best team in the East. I don't know if they're going to get the number two seed, but they're right. They're going to be right there, you know, when it's all said and done, because it's clear that they've turned the corner. And out West, Golden State is really all about, is Andrew Bogut going to be healthy? I mean, of course, everyone else, you know, needs to stay healthy as well, and health is relative in, you know, in professional sports in general. But if he's going to be there at the end, at the end of the season and be available, you know, and like I said, relatively healthy for the postseason push, I could see Golden State making a, you know, making it very difficult to knock them out.
Yeah, it's with Atlanta, my opinion on Atlanta is the whole thing is funny to me, because early in the season, you know, they got off to kind of a rough start, pretty much the start we expected them to. They were, you know, then they won, well, like, you know, 17, you know, they had 17 and 18, then they won 19 in a row. It was just ridiculous what happened. But with them, it's funny to me with people, it's like, I do think that they're a legit contender to win the East. The thing that's funny to me, though, is it was like, are these guys for real? Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they're okay. And then, you know, the win streak goes on, and it's like, then everybody's, you know, oh yeah, this Atlanta team is for real. Like, they're like sticking their chest out, like they know something. It's really pretty much what we were talking about the other night with the Twitter universe, where nobody saw this coming. And for people that act like that, you know, it's, you know, a runaway thing with the Hawks being so good, you know, Horford and that they're like, oh, Horford and Millsap, we completely overlooked it. It's like, no, we didn't. The reason we overlooked it is for good reason. Horford's always injured, and Millsap's, he's pretty good. It's a pretty good front court, and, you know, it looks really good right now because Horford's healthy. That's the only, you know, that's the thing that kind of bothered me with Atlanta, where people are starting to talk, you know, they've talked themselves into buying into Atlanta, which is the rest of the season has been, they've been trying to talk themselves into. Now they're there with Atlanta.
You know,
and I'm still a little shaky on them. With not, I think Teague's close to being a star. I like Schrader. Korver's great on the perimeter. I think you give them a 7-game series against the Bulls. Bulls, Cavs, I just see them going down, not because they're not good enough, just because I feel like I just don't think they have enough experience yet.
And that's fair. You know, they did, you know, most of this group, you know, they were, they were together last year. So they did have the, you know, like the run that they made last year, especially, you know, down the stretch, you know, together. But, you know, I hear that. The one thing I'll say is this, because you referenced that conversation that we had about Twitter and how everybody, you know, will puff their chest out. In sports, folks need to, and again, this is just my opinion, folks need to be able to say, hey, look, I was wrong. Hey, look, I thought it was going to go this way, and it went the other way. You're right. Atlanta is a surprise. I did not think they were going to be good coming into the year. Just like, to be honest with you, I didn't think Memphis was going to be great. Not that I didn't think they were going to be great. It was just that I looked at how deep the Western Conference was, and I thought that they would be one of those teams that fell off. Obviously, not only did they go out and pick up Jeff Green, but they've been playing fantastic basketball all year. So what it really boils down to is it's okay to be surprised. It's okay to say, like, wow, I didn't anticipate Atlanta doing this, but, hey, now that they're doing it, let's pay attention and let's take a look at it. I the thing with the Bulls, I'm not sold on them, and you'll remember I was all Bulls 100% in the Eastern Conference, for this upcoming year. They just, for whatever the reason is, whether it's that they don't, you know, like, whether it's that Thibodeau's voice has gotten old, you know, like in the room, or that, you know, the weird dynamic of, is Derrick Rose the guy? He's the franchise guy, but he's still the guy. You know what I mean? I don't know what the cause is, but something just doesn't look right in Chicago. It just doesn't. So I can't trust them. I can't say, like, oh, yeah, they would just beat Atlanta. In fact, right now I think Atlanta would beat them. But against Cleveland, at the very least, I think it would be a great series. Same thing with Toronto. I think it would be a great series. And I can't wait for it. We got 30 games left.
Yeah, I think we're heading into 30 games left here in the lead. You know, looking at, but with Chicago, the thing, what would you rather, okay, going into the playoffs, would you rather have a coach that is like in the Jim Harbaugh situation where you kind of know that he's on his way out? Or would you have a team that is minus a superstar in Atlanta with, you know, from the officiating standpoint, from the I'm kind of going conspiracy theorist on this after my conversation last night. But, you know, you look at Atlanta without a superstar. Would you rather have a situation where going into the playoffs without a superstar or with a coach that is doing well but his voice is kind of falling off?
Well, can I cheat and say give me the healthy squad, you know? Because another issue that Chicago is having is that Joakim Noah, not only is he one of their better players all around, but when he's not fully healthy, it kind of feels like he's not even the same. He doesn't even have the same influence that he clearly had with, you know, or has had in the past with that team within the locker room and on the court. To your question, you know, honestly, especially if Chicago isn't healthy, give me Atlanta. I don't think it'll be as much, because I've heard the same thing about, like, hey, you need stars, because of the officiating in the playoffs, you know, you want to get the benefit of the doubt. Look, the officials have been giving the Spurs calls, for years, and I'm not saying giving them calls, but the Spurs haven't lacked for calls over the last couple of years, and And it, you know, look, I have a tremendous amount of respect, you know, for Tim Duncan. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Tony Parker. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Manu Ginobili. But they wouldn't, in any, in my opinion, be, you know, quote unquote superstars any longer. You know, so if,
right.
if Atlanta's playing well, if they're healthy, I see no problem with, you know, I would have no problem whatsoever picking them in a series.
You know, looking at the team that I'm kind of intrigued by, I would be even more intrigued by them if they hadn't gotten that suffered injuries. And that team is the Milwaukee Bucks. Losing Jabari Parker, losing Kendall Marshall, kind of, you know, it's sad that they lost those two guys. But you look at them, do you think they have any shot, say, against a banged-up Chicago, say, against maybe a Washington if, you know, say Nene or Gortat goes down. Do you see them having any shot in a series, or do you think it's going to be kind of a whitewash?
At the very least, it would be funny just to be able to tweet out butts and six. But, you know, it, shout out to Brandon Jennings, and I hope his Achilles heals, you know, fully and relatively quickly. But, look, you know what's tough about it? I want to say, like, yes, they have a shot because I love what Brandon Knight has developed into. I love that, you know, you're no longer just only seeing, like, him getting crossed over, like, on ridiculous vines and or getting dunked on by DeAndre Jordan. Like, now all of a sudden, you know, people are realizing, no, this is a legitimate ball player. You know, look, whether he's an all-star or all-star level, he's played great basketball for them. I love Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I still believe in Ilyasova, but the truth of the matter is, they're, you know, without Jabari Parker and with only, you know, this year together and under kid, you know, with whom, by the way, he's not going to get any consideration for Coach of the Year, but should absolutely get a ton of credit. Especially considering when he went there, we all thought, like, well, this is just a cash grab and simply an opportunity to link up with your buddy. That guy's done a hell of a job this year. But, you know, with the inexperience that they've got, I guess it's a double standard because I'm saying without, like, a go-to guy, you know, without, like, an established score that, you know, or a set of established scores, I don't necessarily see them putting up that much of a fight in the series. I'll say this, they're going to fight hard. They're gonna play defense. They're gonna make you work. But I don't see them beating any of those teams.
Are you at all concerned? Well, before we get into George Karl, I got a little bit of a theory on that. But are you a little concerned with Kevin Durant that he might be a superstar that's starting to be cut down in his prime, like a Tracy McGrady? Iverson kind of had his prime. A Tracy McGrady type with all these foot injuries. McGrady had knee injuries. I feel like Durant, I don't want to think that way, but he's had a rough season. I know it's just one season out of, what, seven? But this is not a good way to start your seventh season in the NBA, start having foot injuries.
Yeah, look, anytime it's repetitive foot injuries or multiple foot injuries, I start getting concerned. And, you know, it's going to sound funny, especially when it comes to big men. Now, yes, is Kevin Durant, is, you know, people are going to be like, Kevin Durant's not a big man? Look, he's 7 foot, okay? I've stood next to him, well, beneath him in the locker room. The guy's legitimately, you know, if whether he's 6'10", 6'11", the guy's up there. So anytime you have a large frame player, and I know he's still thin, but it doesn't matter. That's still a lot, you know. That's still a lot of pressure going down on on those feet and on those legs. You know, when they start having repetitive injuries, I do start to worry. With him, he's 25 years old. All you can do is hope that this is just that, you know, that one bad year, and that eventually, you know, he can rest over the summer, you know, get fully permit his body to heal. Because even if they make it into the postseason, I don't think that they're going to be in there for, you know, all that long. There's a bold prediction that, you know, of course, when they're playing in the finals, everybody's going to say that guy Jabari Davis, you should really just stop making predictions. You have to hope that it's just going to be a matter of a rough patch in the seventh year, and that he can bounce back next year. I wouldn't have brought it up, and I'll knock on wood for him, but it's a great point.
Do you, you know, you had an interesting post on Instagram a few weeks back, or maybe it was a few days back, I don't know. Alcohol ruined my mind. But yes, you had a post with Brandon Roy, Grant Hill, McGrady, and Penny Hardaway. And it was, you know, who, you know, basically like who would have been the next Jordan, essentially, if they hadn't gotten injured. And I feel like, you know, with looking at what Penny Hardaway was able to do in such a short span, I feel like he would have been the next Jordan. Like, you know, if you even listen to Horace Grant talk, he'll say he would have been better than Kobe. And I always like those woulda, shoulda, coulda with these guys that get injured. But I feel like it would have, with that list, I go Penny 1, Grant Hill 2, actually McGrady 2, Grant Hill 3, and Brandon Roy 4. What would your ranking be with those four?
I would honestly, I would go T-Mac, then Penny. Roy is coming in fourth, and I love B. Roy. I loved him. I'd be honest with you, I wanted the Lakers to find a way to steal him eventually at some point. So it was an absolute shame to see him go down, but he's still fourth on that list. Look, I mean, you can go either way, and of course, you know, meaning Grant would be third. You know, you can go either way, you know, with any of those, with, you know, especially the top three, because all three of them were supremely gifted, and it's really just a shame that we were unable to see, you know quite what they might have been. But Tracy McGrady, for those that don't remember, that dude was bad. And when I say bad, I mean had everything on the court. You know, could handle the rock, was a superb playmaker, and for one, being 6'9", being able to dribble and pass the way that he could shoot, you know, and you weren't blocking his jump shot. You know, he had that, you know, slingshot, you know, from, you know, kind of like over his, you know, like over his shoulder, you know, and you know, like I said, like, Tracy McGrady, in my honest opinion, would have been an all-time great. I honestly believe that. Now, some can question his heart, some, you know, and which they have. Some can question whether he was fighting to get through, you know, play through the injuries, which, you know, people have. But regardless of that, in terms of an actual skill set and physical capability, Tracy McGrady literally had it all.
Yeah, McGrady, I actually feel Penny, well, McGrady had a little bit more of a window. I think Penny, what did Penny flame out about, 98 maybe? And,
yeah, like right around there. When he was playing, playing with a blonde hair chasing kid in Phoenix.
Yeah, that was an experiment that, yeah, flamed out pretty quickly. I feel, you know, the way he played, I can't imagine if him and Shaq had been able to work it out and Penny stayed healthy, what they could have done in Orlando. I mean, there would have been, I think, the end of, you know, Jordan probably. Is that fair to say?
It actually it blanked out right when you said at the end of Jordan, and then I didn't hear what you said. Sorry.
Don't you think Jordan would have at the end of with Penny and if him and Shaq would have been able to make it work out, Penny would have stayed healthy. Don't you think they could have ended Jordan's repeat at some point? And, you know, they would have beaten the Bulls again in a series. That would have you stay together.
You know what's tough, and I have to be honest about it, and this is where, you know, I think that people don't necessarily, and I'm not talking about you, but I don't think enough people acknowledge how significant coaching can be. Because Penny and Shaq would have been great. They would have won a ton of games. They would have, you know, 60-plus probably most years. And, you know, won their share of, first round and even second round postseason, a postseason series or two each year. But I got to be honest with you, having watched Phil Jackson up close and personal and watched the way that he manipulates a series and appreciated the way that he really takes advantage of even the most minute detail in a series. Quite frankly, Shaq, knowing that Shaq probably would not have ever gotten as motivated as he got when playing, as he did when playing under Phil Jackson, I still would have taken the Jordan's Bulls every day of the week. every single day of the week. And I know that's not the answer you wanted, but I just don't think that they would have gotten there.
It's not the answer I wanted, and I might ban you from the show for talking so ill of my opinion.
My bad. Look, I look at it like this. Scott Brooks has had a heck of a lot of talent over the last 5 years, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, you know, in Oklahoma City. I know that he's, you know, he's considered to be a good coach. I personally think that he has let them, that he is the issue there. That is the reason, you know, I don't think he develops his talents enough. I don't think, like, he gets them to play. They play, you know, yes, they play hard. I'm not saying that they don't respect him or anything like that. But for whatever reason, I honestly think if you give another, you know, another coach all of the talent, like, honestly, if you give Spoelstra the talent that he's had, I think he would have found a way to win it, you know, win a title. And I'm not saying that Spoelstra is an all-time, you know, all-time great, but I think there's a significant difference between, you know, championship level coaches and guys that, you know, guys that you can count on to, you know, win 50 games a year and make things exciting.
I'll give that to you.
We can name a ton of coaches that, you know, are very good coaches. Look, George Call, yeah. Great coach. You know, great coach.
Yeah.
Never, you know, was never able to get over the hump. It stinks that he had to go up against Jordan in his heyday. I understand that, but regardless, he had plenty of other years to make it. Was never able to do that. Mike D'Antoni, same deal. Won a ton of games in Phoenix. I can already hear somebody whining and saying, "Well, if Robert Horry doesn't win, yeah, okay, you had a ton of talent all those other years as well, and you still weren't able to do it." Certain coaches, you can count on them to get you over the hump and be a difference maker in a series. I just don't think that those guys are.
Yeah, I agree with you. With Carl, I mean, they lost to the Nuggets. That wasn't even a good Nuggets team. You know, losing in the first round as the 8-1, and then, I mean, he had plenty of chances. And he had a few good Bucks teams that maybe could have made it out of the East.
Ray Allen, Sam Cassell, Glenn Big Dog Robinson, they had a ton of talent on those Bucks teams.
Tim Thomas, I mean, that was a solid team, and, you know, I think he kind of burned bridges with those guys. The other thing, well, speaking of George Karl, I think it's kind of ridiculous that the story is out that he's interested in going to the Kings. Why would you want to go to the Kings when the Magic job is available? You go to the East, you got Vucevic, you got a great young backcourt. Tobias Harris, if you can re-sign him, that's a nice piece. I know that you have listened to my rants and raves about the Magic over the last year, whether it's, you know, way premature to rave about them, but I like, you know, Victor Oladipo, and with Elfrid Payton, that's going to be a really good defensive backcourt in the years to come, and that'll be beneficial against backcourts like John Wall and Bradley Beal. You know, against Kyrie Irving when the Cavs have to move on from LeBron. I like the Magic long term, and I think George Karl is stupid to go to a team that has no bench. And your only future is DeMarcus Cousins. They never draft well. Stauskas is a disaster. I don't know why you would even consider going to a dumpster fire like the Kings when you could go to the Magic, which is kind of a fire right now. But you're in the Eastern Conference. You build them up a little bit. You can win 60 games like the Magic did like four or five years ago.
You know, it could be a matter of personal preference. It could be a matter of, if I'm not mistaken, I think George Karl lives out here on the West Coast, you know, on a regular, you know, throughout the year. So maybe that has to do with it. Maybe he likes being, you know, being along the coast, you know, over here. Or, you know, what about this idea? What if he's really, you know, what if he's trying to drive the price up and playing one, you know, pitting one against the other? If I were to choose, honestly, the best player out of those two situations is DeMarcus Cousins, but the best,
right,
you know, total team, in my honest opinion, you know, with the most potential, would be the Magic. So I would choose the Magic in that situation because, like you said, I love Nikola Vucevic. You know, of course, and, you know, former SC player, kid can go. And, well-deserving All-Star, All-Star nod this year. I'm really intrigued to see what Oladipo can develop into. I can't wait to see Aaron Gordon. Now, it's not, it's not Jock Vaughn's fault that Aaron Gordon was injured, all throughout, what has been a disastrous rookie campaign. But let's not forget how, just how excited we all were about that young man, not 6 months ago. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he might be able to develop into. And you name it, Elfrid Payton, they've got a ton of guys, Tobias Harris. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him this offseason. If I'm not mistaken, he's due for a big payday. We'll see what GM Rob Hennigan does there. But I'm with you on that one. If I were George Karl, I would and the options are really open. I definitely would choose would choose Orlando out of those two options. I'm not a believer in whatever they've got going on in Sacramento. I don't understand it. I thought they were foolish for firing Mike Malone. First of all, the guy was 11-13, and Boogie had just missed 4 or 5 games, if I'm not mistaken. The team was actually playing some semblance of defense, or you could tell that they were working their way toward it. I just don't understand, and I definitely don't understand the whole thought, and who knows how much validity, there was to this, but the whole thought of, wanting to play a 4-on-5 defense so that you can outlet and run, basically when you start getting, and no disrespect to, Vivek Renadive, and that's the owner of the Kings, or the majority owner at least, but when you have owners that don't necessarily know the game, they probably should just be there, as a fan. You know what I mean? When you start introducing all types of foolishness and all types of, gimmicks, look, your organization has been terrible for quite some time. How about trying to build it the traditional way before you try to reinvent the wheel? That's just my thought on it.
I put in a couple times got a couple lottery tickets from time to time, and I've thought about buying an NBA franchise if I were to win the $500 million jackpot. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I would be the type of owner that would get fined for saying really things in the media about referees. Mm-hmm. The marquee type. Just be be a fan. And, kind of, I would hire basketball people around me, even though I feel like I know enough that I could dabble in the ownership game. I feel like I could, be a fan and also be a businessman in the same sense. There's just some of these jackass owners out there, like the Kings owner, and I think Ballmer's kind of that guy too. He's knight in shining armor, but I kind of think he's a little overboard with his ideas, and he doesn't speak out about him, but I think he's kind of a whack job, kind of the way the Kings owner is.
Well, Ballmer doesn't bother me nearly as much. Are the antics and the silly dancing and stuff, is that corny to me? Yes, but he doesn't really bother me because he's not interfering. With the actual product on the court. And the Renadive thing, absolutely no disrespect. I'm sure he's a wonderful, wonderful person. He's done a tremendous amount for the community in Sacramento. It's great to see that they stuck it out and, kept the Kings there. But again, look, if you were in that position, say, going with your fantasy proposal there, even if you hired basketball guys, you'd know the game. So you can be a voice in the room. I have no problem with that. I can't tell a billionaire how to act or what to do with his money. All I'm saying is be smart enough to hire those basketball guys. Look, I like to cook. I like to barbecue. But if I hit the lotto, and I actually think I'm pretty good. I've been told I'm pretty good. But if I hit the lotto, you can best believe I'm going to have a professional doing it for me. Why would you force yourself to do it? Get the best available. And if you're the Kings, I just don't understand what's going on. Honestly, I just don't.
No, it's the proverbial dumpster fire, as we call it. I don't know if we've talked on this topic since the last time we talked, but Joel Embiid, do you have some concern with him as far as not only his weight, but, you know, the foot injury? Are you concerned at all about Joel Embiid?
What I hope is that the Philly organization, you know, like the Sixers organization is working with him to continue to develop and, you know, from a maturity standpoint and also, you know, from an understanding of what it means to be a professional, you know, in professional sports or, you'll be an athlete in professional sports. You know, he's still very, very young, plenty of time in order to, you know, to get things in order. But you just don't want it to, you don't want, you know, terrible habits to develop over, the, you know, like in those first couple of years. Especially when you're coming off of, you know, a significant injury, obviously an injury significant enough to keep you out for the entire, for your entire rookie season. So yeah, I have concerns, you know, because, you know, and look, a lot of the stuff that he does and says, it's lighthearted, funny stuff. And he's really, and, but the fact that, you know, the fact that he's really toned it down, maybe, you know, maybe tells you that Philly has been in his ear. You just have to hope that, like I said, you know, that they work with him, that he's open to the idea and that, you know, it works out. Cause I'd really like to see what he could, you know, turn, you know, what he could develop into. I'm not going to go with the asinine, you know, he's the next Hakeem. I generally stay away from, you know, those types of comparisons unless there's like, you know, a legitimate amount of evidence to, you know, like, you know, obviously more than like 15, you know, college games, you know, like to determine it on. But the guy has a ton of potential. You know, from a physical perspective, you know, especially obviously when fully healthy, you know, he does look like that next level guy. So, all you know, while I do have concerns, all I can say is I hope that the Sixers organization is just working with him and just make sure to continue to help, you know, continue to help him help himself.
Last thing before I let you go, do you want to tell everybody where we can find you on Twitter, the internets, all the wonderful stuff from Jabari Davis?
Bob, as I always do, first let me thank you. It's always a pleasure. I know I rambled a little bit today. I probably tried to fit too much into a 45-minute conversation, but I definitely appreciate it. I'm easy, Jabari Davis NBA on Twitter, if you do the Twitter sort of thing. Actually, I have an Instagram, and every so often I give you some, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff, but most of the time it's just silly memes and things like that, but it's J Davis NBA. You can find my material on basketballinsiders.com. And you know what? I won't extend it any further. If you follow me on Twitter, I post out all the links all the time. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jabari, I always appreciate you coming on. Always a great time. And we'll have to do this again soon. Well, whenever we have time. And whether it's a month from now, 2 months from now, whatever, always a pleasure talking to you.
Truly my pleasure, man. Why don't we reconnect around the playoffs?
Awesome. We'll do, for sure. We'll do a playoff preview or something.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk to you later, guys. God bless.